and welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. Let's talk about cash, a.k.a. paper, a.k.a. folding money. I'll bet this is the first time the nappy roots have been used when introducing the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. I own that. The Fed does more than rattle interest rates and get blamed for things well beyond its control. The Fed also does tons of research. And a new study shows that cash money is not on the decline. That's an urban myth. Cash is actually rising in usage. Here's my chat with a researcher and analyst who helped pull together the new report for the Federal Reserve's Cash Product Office.
Claire Wang, policy analyst in the San Francisco Federal Reserve.
One of the better blog headlines I've read recently is "The more things change, cash remains." You've got a new study out. I'm just wondering, you at the Federal Reserve do a lot of research, a lot of data collection, and you parsed this one when it comes to cash in our pockets. So what was the biggest takeaway you took this year?
I think one interesting thing this year was that cash was still the most frequently used payment instrument in 2015. I know there's been a lot of talk about how cash is dying or cash is no longer king or technologies and cards are replacing cash completely. And we're still seeing that people are using cash the most despite preferences or despite their demographics.
And mostly in lower denominations, or did I read that wrong?
Right, that is correct. And a lot of that usage is driven by small value transactions, so specifically transactions under $10, like a pack of gum or a cup of coffee. And a lot of people are using cash for this range of transactions.
I noticed that cash carried, right, or on hand, if you will, it seemed to go to the people that are more affluent.
Right.
And people who are less affluent that use cash on lower. Can you help me understand the gap between those two?
Sure. So it may seem kind of strange, like how can both extremes be holding cash? So this is my personal view, or my guess, is that people at the higher end, they can afford to carry around large amounts of cash just in case. So they can have a backup $200 or $100 in their pocket just in case they need it, but they can just afford to hold it there. Whereas maybe someone who was less wealthy might need to actually spend that money and they couldn't afford to just have $200 sitting around. However, at the same time, we also see a lot of cash use among low-income people. So that explains why they're carrying cash, because they're actually using it. So we may have caught them carrying cash right before they're about to spend it and make purchases.
I was just wondering, what is the Fed's stake in cash and our usage of cash? I mean, what's at the core? There's a lot of research and a lot of big brain power that goes into this. So what's at stake?
That's a really great question. We care a lot about what's going on with cash because specifically the Cash Product Office's mission is to ensure there's enough supply to meet demand. So when banks or stores need money, we need to make sure there's enough supply at the reserve banks to fulfill this demand. And in order to be efficient in our operations, we need to know how much demand and cash usage is going on. Are we holding too much? Are we not holding enough? Where do we see this going? And as we invest in more equipment further down the line and a few years out, we need to make sure we order the right number of equipment.
What equipment exactly are we talking
about? So these are like cash processing machines, or making sure we hire the right number of cash operators to process the money that comes in and out.
Now, there's another kid at the playground, and that's digital currency right now.
Yes.
Did that come up in your research, too?
Slightly. We did not have enough data to draw definitive conclusions since it hasn't really taken off. So we did not include that in the scope of our paper.
So cash is going nowhere anytime soon.
Right. And we think that this is because it offers a lot of benefits that other electronic forms of payments don't. Like, it's immediate. It's convenient. I know I personally, if I'm doing a transaction with a stranger, like I'm selling a table on Craigslist, I would do cash. I wouldn't trust a Venmo exchange or a check or a debit card.
It's untraceable in the good way and a bad way.
Right.
Let's say consumers and users on the lower end of the age scale, how are they adapting to cash?
We saw a strong preference for cash within that age group. They actually had the largest share within the 18 to 24 year old range that preferred cash. So about 28% of 18 to 24 year olds cited cash as their favorite payment instrument. And that was surprising to us because usually you imagine a younger consumer as like using Apple Pay or their Apple Watch
and
cards exclusively. But we're seeing that they're actually preferring and using debit and cash and very little credit card.
you know, just anecdotally this morning in the newsroom here, I was asking, like, how much cash do you have in your pocket? I went around and asked everybody, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, there were some people who had more than 50, but they were very rare. I'd say, like, two out of, I think I talked about 15 people. Mm-hmm. So two had more than $50 in cash. Everybody else was 10 and under.
Yeah.
So how does this study and your data and research relate to, I don't know, a broader public or a broader slice?
In general, for the broader public, we're kind of seeing movement towards the extremes. So people are either holding cash all days of the diary or just not at all. And then similarly with the amounts they're holding, it's kind of moving towards the extremes, towards higher amounts or towards lower, like $5. Uh-huh. And we think that that's kind of reflective of maybe people who are holding cash less, they don't find value in holding it to use as a payment instrument. And then on the other hand, people holding it all the time and holding larger amounts are seeing more value in having that as a backup.
Interesting, because I'm thinking like a use case for me is I go to Starbucks and I use my Apple Pay, but I'll just drop a buck in of cash into the tip jar because it's a lower transaction, right? So, all right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, thank you for coming in, Claire.
Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
That was Claire Wang. She's a researcher and big brain at the San Francisco Federal Reserve. Cash is not going anywhere anytime soon, but wherefore Bitcoin? The digital currency was all the rage, at least in headlines, just a couple of years ago. First, here's a quick working definition of what Bitcoin is exactly.
What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is the first decentralized digital currency. Bitcoins are digital coins you can send through the internet. Compared to other alternatives, Bitcoins have a number of advantages. Bitcoins are transferred directly from person to person via the net, without going through a bank or clearinghouse. This means that the fees are much lower. You can use them in every country. Your account cannot be frozen. And there are no prerequisites or arbitrary limits. Let's look at how it works. Several currency exchanges exist where you can buy and sell bitcoins for dollars, euros, and more. Your bitcoins are kept in your digital wallet on your computer or mobile device. Sending bitcoins is as simple as sending an email. And you can purchase anything with Bitcoin.
Now that's from a YouTube tutorial. There's a link on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio for that in its entirety. The thing is, the video does not mention that bad people can also use Bitcoin right now because it's largely untraceable. And here's the heist of the century you likely either forgot or did not hear about. A Bitcoin exchange called Mt. Gox was hacked a couple of years ago, and 800,000 Bitcoins were stolen. At the time, that was almost half $1 billion worth of the currency. So, is digital currency DOA? Not exactly. It has been a slow adoption, however. Now, where there's innovation, regulation is sure to follow. And in looking to follow the legal frameworks set by the U.S. and Japan, Korea is set to become one of the few countries to regulate Bitcoin and its use. Korea has data showing Bitcoin usage is on the rise, so it will start regulating the cryptocurrency in early 2017. Dubai is also about to regulate Bitcoin. The most populous city in the United Arab Emirates is taking Bitcoin very seriously. The head of the financial system in Dubai said, quote, "There is an urgent need to spread awareness about Bitcoin so as to focus on the highest level of security and privacy within the virtual world," end quote. Innovation, then regulation, and that equals legitimacy. Coming up after this short break, we stick with currency. This time, it's a currency exchange that helps people, especially immigrants, send money to family back home. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Come on back.